Europe's Innovation Fund Heat Auction is a £1 billion pilot program designed to decarbonize industrial process heating. It uses a competitive bidding mechanism which models the European hydrogen auction. The results of the 2025 iteration show potential gaps in the market and highlight areas where more support is required to ensure decarbonization technologies can scale effectively. To learn more, I speak to Daniel Gallus, Europe Director at the Renewable Thermal Collaborative, a global non-profit dedicated to decarbonizing industrial thermal energy use with renewable solutions. Daniel provides insights into the pros and cons of available technologies and highlights the urgent need to address the high price of electricity, which could have dire consequences for Europe's industrial competitiveness. I'm Pamela Larg, and this is the Energy Transitions Podcast. Daniel, thank you so much for joining me today. For our listeners who might be a little bit unfamiliar with the European Heat Auction under the Innovation Fund, tell us more about that and why is it important that we have this conversation right now?
So firstly, it is really a pleasure to be here and thank you for having me. I think I would start with the importance, and that needs a little bit of an introduction to what actually heat is, because that's in the name of the Innovation Fund Heat Auction, because that's a topic that's quite underappreciated at this point. So heat or industry uses heat in its processes, and that makes up roughly 2/3 of all the energy that they use. So you can basically split it, whatever industrial company, they use heat and electricity, 2/3 will be heat, one-third electricity. And the reason for that is that it's really used everywhere. It is, you can probably imagine kind of steel mills or glass furnaces and this like very hot molten products. But these kind of high temperatures, above 400 degrees, represent only half of the industrial heat demand. The other 50% is actually below 400 degrees, and that is sometimes forgotten, but it is used in the way of, or in the form of steam, hot water, hot oil, to basically create all the products that we use. It's used to fry chips, to pasteurize dairy, to sterilize pharmaceutical equipment, and for basically many more other processes in industry. So it is really all-encompassing, but at this point in Europe, it is mostly supplied by natural gas with natural gas boilers. The good part is that it can be electrified with heat pumps, electric boilers, thermal batteries, or it can be supplied directly with renewable heat from geothermal or solar thermal technologies. And this is what the Innovation Fund auction actually wants to support. So it supports the electrification and the use of direct renewable heat in industry instead of natural gas. And that makes it very important, especially now with the crisis because of the war in Iran and also following the crisis when Ukraine was attacked by Russia. But going directly into the auction after this kind of introduction of why it is important, it is quite unique because it focuses on the scale-up of these technologies. So it is not an R&D support. It is not for pilot projects and so on. It really focuses on the scale-up, and it utilizes so-called competitive bidding to enable that. So companies, when they want to apply for this auction, for this support, and they bid what subsidy they actually require to make that project commercially viable, to implement the solution. This is in comparison to standard grant subsidies, where you need to specify what your costs are going to be, where you're supplying everything. You need to really kind of have a very detailed breakdown of what you need. Whereas here, you decide yourself, do I need 10 euro per megawatt hour support to make this project viable? Do I need 20 euro per megawatt hour? What makes the project work? And this allows the commission to actually make the application quite simpler. Whereas normally you would spend really hundreds, like 500 plus hours plus consultants for a similar similar grant with a similar size of a few million euro. Here, it should be much simpler because there's this competitive angle of it where the bids are basically self-selected by being more competitive.
So you say it should make it more simple. And I think from what I'm hearing, you know, it's really important that we start to simplify the electrification and decarbonization of heating. And like you say, scaling up these technologies, because we need to focus on this and it's an urgent matter. Is this auction mechanism effective? And perhaps looking into that, we can delve into the results of 2025 and perhaps what we're looking for, perhaps what we're looking into for 2026.
Of course. I mean, it is effective as much as a subsidy can be effective. So I'll be speaking from the experience that we hear from companies. I work with the Renewable Thermal Collaborative, and we're a nonprofit that really specializes on industrial thermal energy. But what makes us unique is that we talk with the companies. So we convene around 120 industrial end users. That means the pharmaceutical, food and beverage companies and others, and also the solutions providers, the heat pump manufacturers and so on. So I'm on a daily basis talking with these companies, and they very much appreciate this auction. This is an incredible step up in the support and in the importance that is put on the topic of electrification and renewable heat in industry. And personally, I think just the signal of industrial heat is important, is even maybe more important than the money itself. Because with the money itself, the first round especially ran into some issues. It was announced very early last year, but it was a new instrument. We knew that it would be modeled after the hydrogen auction, but we wouldn't know what would be the exact terms and conditions. And they were developed throughout the year. And I have to give credit to the commission and the team that's developing this, that they really took to heart the feedback from the industry. They were holding several stakeholder consultations and so on. But this also means that the whole process took a while. So in the end, they published the final terms and conditions in October, and then opened the auction in December and closed it in February. So we're talking about a timeline of months, whereas the timeline of these heat decarbonization projects is measured in years. Like, the average project that I've heard about takes, when it's very fast, 2 to 3 years. When it's one of those new technologies, it's around 5, 6, even more years to get from the initial idea to actually commissioning or even to feasibility and so on. So you cannot just come up with projects suddenly and apply. And this resulted in the fact that actually only 85 projects submitted bids for the auction, totaling 1.4 billion euro for the budget of 1 billion. So only a slight oversubscription. And unfortunately, when the commission looked at the eligibility requirements, like those can be if the project is in the EU or if it's actually a heat technology that somebody applied for, or even if the application is actually fully filled in and it is not just a piece of paper. And they came out only to 65 projects, and more importantly, only around 400 million euro, less than 400 million. So in total is asked by those 45 projects. This means that there's around 600 million euro that was left on the table from the first round. This is unfortunately a bit of a disappointment, but really shows that it takes a long time to make these projects happen.
Thank you, Daniel, for giving us those details. It would be interesting to find out more about those 65 projects, actually, the types of technologies that made it through.
I would start with the geographical split of those projects. So around 70% of them are in Spain and France. And this again highlights that the impact of the subsidy is only limited, because Spain and France are ready for electrification. They have cheaper electricity prices and have the grid availability. And Spain as well as a great country for example, solar thermal, where there were two projects that applied. Then looking at the industry, there were three main sectors that applied. That is paper and pulp, food and beverage, and chemicals. Again, that makes sense. Those are the main energy intensive in the sectors with the most sites, with also the most appetite maybe for decarbonization, and just having the sites in Europe. Because when we look, for example, at textiles, there's not that many textile manufacturing facilities in Europe. They are mostly in Southeast Asia. This just reflects the industrial base in Europe. And lastly, looking at the technologies, that was also somewhat of a surprise and maybe a slight disappointment, and that most of the applications were for electric boilers. So there's nothing wrong with electric boilers per se, but they are not as efficient, for example, as heat pumps. So heat pumps can deliver heat with efficiencies of 2 to 3 times. So you deliver or use 1 unit of electricity and get 3 units of heat out of the heat pump. So it's very highly efficient technologies. Whereas electric boilers work very similarly as gas boilers. So they just have around 90% or 95% efficiency. This can be an issue because the operational costs or the cost of energy to produce heat really makes up around 80 to 90% of the lifetime costs of these solutions. And so the price of electricity, for example, really makes up 80 to 90%. So since the subsidy is only for 5 years, once the subsidy runs out, heat pumps would still be very highly efficient and would probably make a lot of sense to use. Whereas electric boilers may run into difficulties, but of course, who knows what will happen in 5 years. So we may be in a completely different world, and we're going to be happy for every electric boiler that we actually installed.
Daniel, why do you think heat pumps are not perhaps more popular?
I think the reason is twofold, and it does not apply just to heat pumps, but also geothermal and solar thermal. And the first angle is that they are more expensive upfront than electric boilers. They need a lot of integration equipment in case of heat pumps. In case of solar thermal, you are just paying for the upfront equipment cost, and then you have no running costs. So there's a lot of upfront investment that you need. And because of the way the auction or the subsidy works, where you get the money only once you operate the project and you actually produce heat, you're getting this subsidy, this cash flow only later in the project development. So you're running into this issue where you have a lot of upfront costs, but you get the money that you like only later in the project life. Whereas for electric boilers, they are relatively cheap, but then have very high operational costs. So it fits them much better. And the second reason is that they are harder and take even longer to implement than electric boilers. So ideally, for electric boilers, you could just replace them one-to-one with the natural gas boiler. It does not work exactly like that, and you would not want to do that because the main way electric boilers are used currently is that you have both a natural gas and electric boiler, and when the electricity is cheap, you use electric boiler. When the electricity is more expensive, you use the natural gas boiler. So you're kind of playing this arbitrage, always looking at the cheapest price of energy. But yes, you can just plug them in into your current facility, using the same steam network, same kind of whole integration equipment. Whereas with heat pumps, you, for example, want to de-steam. This is a way how you can really save a lot of energy where instead of using high temperature steam for all of your processes, you use hot water, and then you are way more efficient in using only the heat at the temperature that you need. And this is very beneficial for heat pumps, because they are way more efficient if you reach lower temperatures. And similarly for solar thermal, there's a lot that comes into those projects. You need to get the land, the permitting. It's much more novel technology. You need to integrate it properly and so on. So the timelines of these technologies are longer, even more than electric boilers. So with the months that were actually allowed for the preparation of the applications, it was somewhat unfeasible for a lot of these projects to apply.
Thank you for that breakdown, because I think it really gives us perspective on, you know, the types of technologies and the pros and cons of each. And it really does come down to the bottom line in many instances, I think. Daniel, I do want to move on to a question specifically about the various sectors that you believe will benefit most from this auction. Which do you believe will benefit, and which should benefit? Where's the most urgent need for heat decarbonization?
I think that the sectors that will benefit the most are the ones that actually apply the most. So paper and pulp, food and beverage, and chemicals, potentially also pharmaceuticals. And the reason why is that these sectors use technologies that are already technically somewhat mature and almost commercially available. They use the heat pumps, the heat batteries, electric boilers, and so on. And they also fall into this kind of lower to medium temperature processes or industries. With chemicals, then having also the high temperature part. And there you would also have the steel and glass. And these sectors, I do not think will benefit that much from this auction, because the solutions for them are much, basically need a lot of more research and development. In the chemical sectors, you're looking at, for example, steam cracking. This is the first step in the process, where you get basically raw fossil fuels, and you get out the basic chemical products that you then use throughout the chemical supply chain. And there is one project by BASF, Linde, and I think Sandvik in Germany, where they are electrifying a steam cracker. But this is very much a pilot project. It is 1,000 times smaller than commercial scale. So they are still testing whether this is possible, how they could scale it up, and so on. And the auction is more suitable for technologies that are already in the scale-up phase, not in this, we're just testing whether this actually works and how we would deploy that.
I also want to circle back. You referred to the hydrogen auction as well earlier in the conversation. Were there any lessons learned from that auction that you believe are being applied to renewable heat?
I think the biggest one is actually the model itself of this auction, of the competitive bidding, where instead of using grants for specific projects, you're looking to get bids and self-select the projects that will reduce the emissions the most for the cheapest. And I think this is a very important lesson, and really shows kind of the development of thinking in the Commission and in the EU of how to really support the scale up of technologies. Again, I'm talking about that repeatedly, but the grants and so on are more suitable, again, for a first of a kind projects. Whereas if you're a company that is trying to deploy 10 different heat pumps that are somewhat mature, you just need slight support, where in this case, in the first round of the auction, the average bid was around 25 euro per megawatt hour. So this is not huge support when you think about the grand scheme of things, of gas being 50 euro per megawatt hour and electricity in Germany for industrial being around 150, 160 euro megawatt per hour, it is not going to just make the operational expenses disappear. This is to de-risk and help scale up technologies that are proven and are ready for large-scale commercial deployment.
I want to zoom out a little bit, Daniel. We've really focused in on some of the technologies and the pros and cons around them. What do you believe are the biggest barriers that Europe faces in terms of decarbonizing heat? Is it technology or is it financial? Is it policy? In your opinion, where are those biggest barriers?
I think specifically for Europe, the biggest barrier currently is the high electricity price, specifically for electrification of these technologies. I mentioned it before, the 80 to 90% of the lifetime costs of these technologies comes from the energy cost. That means electricity. So when you have the gas prices at around the 50 euro mark, when you look at electricity, and even you don't have to be as extreme as in Germany with 160 euro per megawatt hour. Even if you look at 100, you're at double the operation costs. And that adds millions or dozens of millions of euro over the lifetime costs. So it is really important to structurally reduce the electricity costs to enable electrification. And there are many things that are getting tested across the continent. So in case of the grid fees, for example, that make up a large part of the final electricity costs that get added on to the wholesale electricity cost. The transmission and distributed systems operators across Europe are looking at ways how to utilize the grid more efficiently so that they get more load onto the grid and they can spread these costs across more users. This is where, for example, heat batteries come in, because they can use the electricity when there is space on the grid and when electricity is cheap, kind of helping the whole electricity system. Or there are countries such as Denmark that are moving some of the taxes and levies that are on electricity towards gas, because gas is compared to electricity, unfortunately, in most countries taxed less and is actually favored by governments, which does not make much sense if we want to actually incentivize electrification.
Do you believe that there is a direct correlation between the decarbonization of heat and increasing competitiveness of European industry?
Definitely. Just because there is no way we can be actually competitive on the global markets if we import our energy. So as long as energy is an input to our manufacturing facilities, if we import it, we're going to be always more expensive. And it is also what the Commission is now stressing, this concept of homegrown energy, and that comes from renewables and both on the electricity side and the solar PV and wind part, but also on the heat part. So we have solar thermal, which is often underappreciated, but is widely spread, especially in the residential sector. You have also geothermal, which has a lot of potential, and is also homegrown and can deliver energy that is produced directly in the continent. Looking, for example, at the renewables for electricity, this is always only part of the issue. Because as I mentioned beforehand, in case of industry, one third is electricity, roughly two thirds is heat. So you need to actually translate that electricity to the heat that you actually need for the processes. And that means electrification with heat pumps, with heat batteries, electric boilers, and these technologies. So it all kind of comes together as a kind of energy package. This is how we can potentially lower the cost of energy in Europe and make us more competitive on the global scale.
Daniel, my final question to you, you know, when we have these conversations, sometimes it sounds really academic, but the energy transition is ultimately about people and it's about quality of life for the people on the planet. Would you say that this is a part of what keeps you motivated to continue with the work that you do?
Definitely. It is certainly a big part of that, because we spent the past 25 minutes talking about energy policy, about great technologies, about how we can move Europe to be more competitive. But ultimately, what we want is to reduce our dependence on fossil fuels, because they emit CO2 and other greenhouse gases that increase the temperature. And we see it now in Europe, but even for us, it's 30 degrees heat is still manageable. But in a lot of parts of the world, you're looking at 45 degrees with no access to air conditioning, with just no way to escape. And that is something that I think sometimes gets forgotten in these discussions, that ultimately the climate crisis and the energy policy is about people. I often say to my friends that we, in the climate discussion, we talk about the planet, saving the planet. I think the planet is going to be fine. It is us, the people, who are not going to be fine if we continue burning fossil fuels. So certainly, and this is something that keeps me running and keeps me motivated to work on this topic.
Really thought-provoking statement. Thank you so much, Daniel. It has been an absolute pleasure to speak with you today. And thank you to all of our listeners for joining us. Until next time, goodbye. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Energy Transitions Podcast, brought to you by Enlit and Friends. That's a wrap from me, Pamela Log, and our producer, Kamo Motse. We hope you can join us next time. Visit enlit.world or subscribe for more episodes.